Thank you very much. 29 years ago, last month, I was a ministerial student in a Southern Baptist college in Marshall, Texas. Walking into Bible class one day, I stumbled across a piece of paper. I bent down to pick it up to see what it was, and on the top it said, Sword of the Lord. I'd never heard of the Sword of the Lord, knew nothing about what it was. I picked it up and I saw Billy Sunday's picture on the front. I noticed the little caption up in the top, the little statement of faith, a lot sort of, where it said it opposes modernism, worldliness, and formalism. And while the rest of the class was enduring a Bible lesson in our college, I was reading the Sword of the Lord. I could not tell you how my life was changed. I was a typical young preacher boy. And I have had my life completely transformed by Dr. John Rice and the Sword of the Lord. I can recall years ago when I started taking the sword. I took it, I quit it one time, by the way. I quit it because Dr. Rice had some articles against storehouse tithing. He's had a few since then, too. And I quit it for a while. Then I got me a radio broadcast and decided to take it again. And, but anyway, I began to dream. They used to have Sword of the Lord conferences advertised in the Sword of the Lord. And, oh, in those days, Dr. Jesse Henley, Dr. Joe Henry Hankins, Dr. Bob Jones Sr., and others were in the conferences. And I used to dream of someday getting to save enough money to go to a Sword of the Lord conference. And one day, I picked up the Sword of the Lord, and they said they were having one in Siloam Springs. Siloam Springs, Arkansas. And so, a group of us little right-wing ministerial students in our college got together and decided to save our money and see if we could go to the Sword of the Lord conference and see John Rice personally. Get to hear him preach. Get to hear Lee Robertson, Dr. Bob Jones Sr., and others. And we saved and saved and saved, and I recall that I did not save enough money. One of our students did, and he got to go to Siloam Springs and see John Rice personally. I'll never forget, when he got back, I said, could I shake your hand, please? He said, I'll never wash it. I shook John Rice's hand. And I said, would you shake me, my hand, with the hand that shook the hand of John Rice? I had a little church of about 50 members, and I can recall how much I longed to attend a conference, just one, somewhere, someday. I never dreamed, in my fondest imagination, that I'd ever speak on a conference program. First time Dr. Rice asked me to speak on a conference program was 20 years ago this summer. He wrote me a letter, and I thought, I told my secretary, he sent me somebody else's letter. Send it back and ask him to send my letter. I had a sermon called The Autopsy of a Dead Church. And I followed that night Dr. R.G. Lee after he preached Payday Sunday. I never saw such an anemic-looking sermon outline in my life as mine was. I wanted to quit the ministry after I killed R.G. Lee. But I, now then, for 20 years, I've been privileged to feel the heartbeat of John Rice. I do not know how much I love him, how much I appreciate him. He's my friend, and if I know my heart, I'm his friend. And I'm so glad that God has led him to have these big nationwide conventions, and I'm honored, surprised, pleased, and thrilled to be a part. And looking at the program for the week, to be listed with these great servants of God is a great honor for me. I appreciate Atlanta, Dr. Curtis Hudson, all the pastor brethren here. I appreciate all the work that's gone in. This choir, they weren't together a while ago in the Hallelujah Course, but if they practice, they might get together a little bit and sing it all at the same time. But I enjoyed the choir and the sweet spirit. Now, folks, may I say this before I read the scripture and pray and preach? I think we ought to want to see John Rice. God knows everybody ought to get to know him personally and see him. I think we ought to want to come and see a great crowd like this. This is a wonderful crowd for fundamentalists, for anybody for that matter. But it may well be that this meeting this week is the hope for our country. She's pretty sick, folks. She's pretty sick. And with all due respect to the Atlanta and Georgia people, neither Mr. Carter or Mr. Ford is going to bring what we need in America. It's going to take more than that. So I hope that during the week you'll spend an awful lot of time in your prayer closet praying for God to do something supernatural in these days. I'm going to speak tonight on the subject, will the real America please stand up? Will the real America please stand up? Hebrews chapter 11, please, and verse 32. Hebrews 11, verse 32. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32. And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, of Barak, of Samson, of Jephthah, of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sown asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. Let us bow our heads, please, for prayer. Our Heavenly Father, I pray tonight that you would speak through the lips of this preacher. Speak to my heart as well as to my mind. And speak to the hearts of those who listen as well as to their minds. And I pray that a holy hush shall settle over this room tonight, that something eternal shall transpire in this place in these days. Holy Spirit of God, control me and use me in this hour. In Jesus' name, amen. There is an America tonight where moms and dads prepare little boys and girls on Saturday evening for the coming of the Lord's Day on the next day. There is an America tonight where mom gets up early on Sunday morning, prepares the morning Sunday breakfast, gets the family up, her moms and dads dress little boys and girls and take them to God's house on Sunday. There is an America tonight where millions of people sit in services like this. And men of God like these who stood a while ago stand up and bring the message from God. Where dad sings in the choir or as an usher. Where mother takes care of the nursery or teaches the girls' Sunday school class. Or superintendent of a department. There's an America tonight where dads work hard all week and write out a check at the end of the week for 10% of their income and place it in the collection plate and give their tithes and their offerings to God. There is an America tonight of decency.
chastity, honor, integrity. There is a Bible-believing America tonight. There's an America tonight where more great churches are being built than in the history of the Christian movement. More great soul-winning churches are being built in your generation and in mine in America than has ever been built in anybody's nation since Jesus was crucified on Calvary. There's an America tonight where more grade schools and high schools believe this Bible and teach this Bible in Christian fundamental schools than in any day in the history of our nation. There's an America tonight where over two schools, fundamental Christian schools, are being started every day of the year. There's an America tonight that is now dotted with fundamental Christian colleges whose names you'll hear this week and whose leaders you'll meet this week. Across this nation, from the tip of Florida to California, Southern California, they're Bible-believing, Christ-honoring, soul-winning, fundamental, sin-hating, Satan-fighting Bible colleges, more of them than our nation has ever known. There's an America tonight where personal soul winning is more accepted than ever in our history. There's an America tonight where there are more personal soul winners winning folks to Christ than there ever has been in the history of this country or the Christian church. There's an America tonight where the New York Times said the other day, or wrote the other day, I could not believe my eyes when I read it. The New York Times said that there are now 65 million fundamentalists in America. They made this statement, a tribute to John Rice and others who tried to make this a reality. They said no longer is the Roman Catholic Church the dominant religious influence in America. But they said the dominant religious influence in America is now, glory to God, they didn't say glory to God, glory to God, the fundamentalist people. They said the fundamentalist people exercise more political clout in America than any other religious influence in America tonight. Unbelievable, and yet it's true. We've seen some tremendous strides in the last 20 years, the last 10 years even. I've told folks across the country this little story. I was in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, preaching. Preached on a Monday night, Tuesday morning. Had a big question and answer session on Tuesday afternoon. 200 preachers met, about 200, met and asked questions. I stood behind the pulpit and tried my best to give the right answers. Back in the back, a denominational executive of the big denomination in that state stood and said, Dr. Hiles, could I ask you a question, please? And I said, yes, you may. He said, do you ever get lonesome? I thought that's the most unusual question to ask a preacher. Do you ever get lonesome? I said, what do you mean? He said, being an independent Baptist, being outside the main river of Baptist life, being a tributary off the main stream, do you ever get lonely? And I said, my brother, maybe I ought to tell you something you don't know. The largest church of any kind in the state of Florida is an independent Baptist church. The largest church in the state of Georgia is an independent Baptist church. The largest church in the Carolinas is an independent Baptist church. The largest church in Tennessee is an independent Baptist church. The largest church in Virginia is an independent Baptist church. The largest church in Kentucky is an independent Baptist church. Largest church in Michigan is an independent Baptist church. Largest church in Ohio is an independent Baptist church. Largest church in Pennsylvania is an independent Baptist church. Largest church in Maine is an independent Baptist church. Largest church in Indiana, I know I go there some, is an independent Baptist church. Largest church in Illinois is an independent Baptist church. Largest church in Missouri is an independent Baptist church. I said, brother, could I ask you a question, please? He said, what is it? I said, do you ever get lonely? He said, what do you mean? I said, being outside the main river of Baptist life. Thank God tonight there is like a mighty roaring river, a movement sweeping across this nation toward believing this Bible, toward a heaven that has golden streets and a hell that has fire and sin that's black and salvation that's real and being born again and right is right and wrong is wrong and white is white and black is black. There is a great movement tonight, and there is, thank God, an America like that tonight. But I'm sorry to say, there is also another America tonight. There is an America tonight where in Kansas City, Missouri, you can pick up your telephone and dial a number. A breathy, sexy voice answers what is called dial a porn, dial pornography. That breathy, sexy voice will say, this is Bubbles. I'm standing here talking to you in the nude. Why don't you come over? I think you'll like me. If you don't like me, I have some playmates here. I think you'll like them. There's an America tonight. We're in a city nearby, the place where I pastor, a pretty good-sized little city. The local high school newspaper, published for the student body, had pictures, frontal pictures, of six male nudes on the front cover of the high school paper, and one female nude. There's an America tonight. We're within five blocks of where I pastor. You can walk into one of these dirty, satanic, hellish cesspools called adult bookstores. You can fork over $3 to a female. That female will take off her blouse and take off her underwear down to the waist and strip nude from the waist up, will bend over and shine your shoes in the shine parlor. There's an America night where less than two blocks from First Baptist Church in Hammond, females dance in the nude. There's an America night where the communists can have a convention on the 4th of July, and the NBC, ABC, and CBS don't have any more sense than to turn their cameras on those dirty communists while they lift up their hand in the salute against America. How foolish, how stupid can we get? There's an America tonight. We're in dormitories of our state university. Males and females share the same dormitories. Do you know tonight you are financing a coeducational dormitory in West Point? You are financing a coeducational dormitory in Annapolis? There's an America tonight where you turn on your television and you hear cursing and filth. Let me stop and say this. I do not know of anything in this country tonight that's condemning our country any faster than television is. I'm not going to dwell on it. I've not been home for a night between the hours of what's called prime time, 7 and 10 or 9 or 10, in 9 years. But I was flying to South America recently. My plane, I missed my plane in New York City. Had to stay in a motel room during the prime time hours. I decided to see what was on television. Now, I don't know what's on television on Tuesday night. I don't know what's on television on Wednesday night. I don't know what's on television on Thursday night. I don't know what's on television on Friday night. I don't know what's on television on Saturday night. I don't know what's on television on Sunday night. But I know one thing. Nobody, right with God, can watch it on Monday night. That I know. Some of you ladies, sit home in the afternoon and feed your soul on these little garbage of secret storm and silent hurricane and tiptoeing tornado and all the rest of this garbage. Little three-cornered romances. Illegitimate children. In God's dear name, why don't you get you a Bible? There's an America tonight. From almost any newsstand. You can see the dirty Playboy magazine, Penthouse, Gallery, and all these other magazines that ought to be outlawed and would be outlawed if we had a decent Supreme Court to do so. There's an America tonight. Within a few blocks of the First Baptist Church of Hammond, about a mile, you can see every sordid sex act you want to see. on the screen in what they call an adult movie. There's an America tonight where a church in Tennessee was burned by the enemy, rebuilt, and was burned again. There's an America tonight where a pastor's wife, who killed in self-defense, in defense of her own son, was placed in jail without bond. There's an America tonight where a good brother like Lester Roloff can spend 5 days in jail for trying to help young people be decent and honorable and pure and delivered from narcotics and sin. There's an America tonight where in Oak Forest, Illinois, not far from where I pastor, my good friend, Dr. Schroeder, decided to build a bus barn. The neighbors said, "You build a bus barn, and we'll burn your buses." And they did. There's an America tonight where in Greenville, South Carolina, the Bob Jones University fights for its freedom and for its tax-exempt status. There's an America tonight where in Chicago, Illinois, a member of First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana, tonight has had her baby taken from her arms and from her lap by the HEW, and it's none of their business what she does with her baby. But there's an America tonight where that baby's been taken from that mother's lap. All in the world that mother did was spank that baby on his behind like God has commanded us to do and obey God's admonition of spanking the child. And for that reason, and only that reason, that mother tonight for 5 months has had her arms empty. I don't think some of you folks realize just how close this country is to destruction and the judgment of God. There's an America tonight. We're in Denver, Colorado. A pastor goes to his pulpit wearing a bulletproof vest. In Vestal, New York, a pastor is kidnapped because he preaches against the devil. And the Satan worshippers kidnap him and take his mind and reprogram his mind until he loses his memory, doesn't know who he is, and becomes a different person. There's an America tonight. Where in Chesterton, Indiana, my good friend Roger Votland was indicted and tried for the crime of spanking children in the Christian school. There's an America tonight. We're in the First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana. I cannot even walk to my pulpit without an armed guard. When I left my pulpit this morning, my study, to walk to my pulpit, an armed guard met me outside my door, walked down my own hallway to my own pulpit. When I finished preaching this morning, after Sunday school, my class, an armed guard met me and escorted me back to my study. When I finished preparing for the morning service and went to the service, an armed guard met me and escorted me back to the main auditorium. There's an America tonight where just a few Sunday nights ago, a man with a loaded pistol was arrested in the middle of our lower floor on Sunday night. There's an America tonight where Dr. Jack Van Impe has had his life threatened again and again and again. There's an America tonight where God's men, Dr. Falwell, our good friend, Dr. Falwell, has had his life threatened and is watched like a presidential candidate much of his life. I was praying the other day on Lake Michigan. I spent about 2 hours in prayer. Came back and got in my car. Looked up to the rearview mirror. Behind me, there was a man with a loaded rifle pointing his gun about 100 feet behind me toward my car. I swerved quickly. He shot. Of course, thank God, he missed. But I'm saying, there's an America tonight where a young man walks guard at Hiles Anderson College and is kidnapped while he walks guard. There's an America tonight where the phone rings at our bus center and the voice says to Dr. Vineyard, "Vineyard and Hiles will die next Sunday." Rumors run rampant. It seems like all of a sudden we're not living in the 20th century. It seems like we're at the stake with Huss and Savonarola. We share Patmos with John. We see new images in Dura and hear the crackling of new flames. We seem to hear the roar of lions encouraging us not to pray at our open windows. We don't seem to be in America anymore. We stand before the Cuban firing squad, it seems. We seem to face a Russian prison. We hear the sharpening of Chinese swords. When we see platters, we no longer think of reading the menu, but being the menu. Fox's Book of Martyrs seems to be an incomplete manuscript. And suddenly, ladies and gentlemen, this thing of being a Christian suddenly is for real. no longer a game. Our battles against each other seem so silly and so trivial. Catacombs and Mamertine prisons seem more imminent than Holiday Inns and Howard Johnson. We face the same enemy, by the way, and let me say this. Have all the detente you want to have. Let Mr. Ford go over and wine and dine with Red China and Russia all he wants to. But, brother, dirty communism is just as satanic and just as much out of hell as it used to be when America hated communism like we ought to. What in the name of common sense? Wrong with them? They murder Christians while we drink their wine. And we invite their leader, Mr. Brezhnev, over to put his charisma on our television set and set in your living room and in every living room in America to try to woo and win with his charisma the American public. Several years ago, we had Richard Wormbrand come to our church for a Sunday school rally. Richard Wormbrand spent about 14 years in a communist prison in Russia. While he was preaching one time, he began to twitch like this. And then he would twitch again like this. And twitch again like this. Somebody came and said, Mr. Wormbrand, why is it while you're preaching that suddenly you'll twitch like this? And Mr. Wormbrand said, I'm remembering what happened while I was in prison. They'd come to me and they'd say, you take the Lord's Supper, don't you? Communion. You're a Christian, aren't you? And I'd say, yes. He said they would force me to urinate and take my own urine and drink it for communion. That's the kind of enemy we're wining and dining. That's the kind of enemy we're detenting with. God's dear name, if we don't get a generation of Christians who stand up and fight and stand up and live and give all to Jesus, our boys and girls will be slaves to that kind of tyranny one of these days. Soon. And then Mr. Wormbrand said, he said, then they'd take my own dung and they'd say, open your mouth. And they'd put my own dung, my own elimination, in my mouth and say, say it. This is my body, which is given for you. And he said, when I took communion, they gave me my own urine and my own dung. That's our enemy. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, whitewash it all you want to. But one of the saddest days this nation ever faced is when you put these crooks on television and said, teach our people your communist philosophy. We put them in our college campuses and said, teach our students and speak on our assembly program. There's an American night where we no longer face the barbs of Shimei, but the guillotine of Nero. Being dead then red is no longer a slogan, but a possibility. And give me liberty or give me death is no longer a high school declamation speech. It's a definite possibility in our generation. Brother, practice is over. The game has begun. Basic training is past. Combat is here. Study hall is ended. The final examination is started. Rehearsal is over. The curtain is pulled. The stones of Lystra are being gathered for us, as well as the Apostle Paul. Which is the real America? Which is the real America? Is it that America of the Falwells and the Rices and the Robertsons and the Hudsons? Which is it? Or is it that godless America of the abortion crowd and the new morality and the God is dead philosophy? Which is it? I can tell you which it was. Look back to that meeting in Scrooby in northern England when Pastor James Robinson gathered a handful of people together to seek freedom, to worship their God. See them as they sailed to Holland. Could not find what they sought in Holland, wanted in Holland. See them as 102 of them gathered on the Mayflower and sailed toward America. See them for 65 days sailing across the ocean. Four of them died. See them as the Mayflower Compact in their prayer, which said, O God, our Heavenly Father, we bless Thee for having brought us over this vast and furious ocean to this new world. Hear them as they read the 107th Psalm. O give thanks unto the Lord, for He is good, for His mercy endureth forever. See, then as they meet at Plymouth, Pastor Brewster gathered together a little crowd of people in a building 20 by 20. See them as in the first month they were here, six of them died. And during the first winter, half of them died by springtime. There was not a single family of those early pilgrims but what was stricken by death sometime during that first winter. See them as the Mayflower returned. They were given the opportunity to go back on the Mayflower, back to England. See them as they stood on the shore. Five women and 20 men and 27 children said, we'll not go back. We'll stay here and die before we'll be slaves. Brother, I don't know about you, but I'll die before I let the dirty communist crowd take over America. I'll die! I was talking to one of those enemies of God in the Bible the other day. He said, if you fundamentalists don't like this America like it is, why don't you leave? I said, because we got here first. That's why I'm not leaving. First Thanksgiving, 90 Indians, 55 pilgrims, read the 103rd Psalm. Then that Thanksgiving in 1623, when they divided all the food they had, and each pilgrim had five kernels of corn. That's all, five kernels of corn. Now the question comes, here's an America, like we see tonight. And out yonder is an America, about which I've spoken. Which will be the America for your children and mine? Whoever wants it the most. Whoever wants it the most. Who cares the most? Who gives the most? See the communists and their total dedication. See them as the communist gives 1/14 of his income to his party. Did you hear what I said? A communist who works for the party gives 1/14 of his income. Compare that. You God robbers here in the service tonight that won't give 1/10 of your income to God. We're not going to win the battle. We're not going to save America. We're not going to know our freedom. Listen, within 20 years, you mark it down, within 20 years, the martyrs' names will not be Huss and Savonarola and John Knox. They'll be Robertsons and Rices and Hudson and Hileses. If we do not mean business for God, if we do not save the communists, we'll holler as loud as you holler. We'll give as much as you give. We'll sacrifice as much as you sacrifice. They're your kids as well as mine. It's your country too. You folks that lay home on Sunday night don't even know the church has electric light. God pity that kind of unfaithfulness to God's program. You folks that rob God of the tithe, we'll never save this country that way. You long-haired, hippie-looking freaks. You say, preacher, this is not what I came to hear, but this is what I came to give. You see, when I preach, whether it's to 50 or 5,000, we don't have men use a curb service. You just hold your tray out like the army did, and I just fork it over, that's all. There's nothing wrong with this nation that a generation of Christians who would say, all to Jesus I surrender, couldn't cure. Folks in this room tonight, you haven't read this book 10 minutes in the whole last week. You called yourself fundamentalists. Who wins? Whoever wants it knows. See them in their plants and factories. Tonight, see them in East Chicago, Indiana, in Hammond, Indiana, passing out their dirty literature, trying to destroy everything that's right and decent and pure about America. And they get by with it. What? So youthful. You won't even pass out a gospel tract. You go to a restaurant to eat. You won't even bow your head and pray. Or you may go like that and look up a bit. Stand up! Stand up for Jesus, you soldiers of the cross.
Lift high his royal banner. It must not suffer loss.
See them. As they hear Mao Zedong's motto from people to people. And the slogan, every communist a leader. Karl Marx concluded his Communist Manifesto by saying, you have a world to win. In Russia, they get little boys and girls in schools. They start the day. Teacher stands up and says, Lenin, Lenin. And the boys and girls say, Lenin, Lenin. The teacher says, Lenin lives. And the boys and girls shout, Lenin lives. And the teacher says, Lenin lives forever. The boys and girls shout, Lenin lives forever. Blessed be God. There's some schools in America that are being raised up where we're going to start today saying, Jesus. Jesus. Jesus lives. Jesus lives. Jesus lives forever. Jesus lives forever. See them as they're taught to hate evil and hate capitalism, what they call evil. Dr. Al Janney spoke to me and told me that he had seen the list of the 10 most wanted men in America by the Communist Party. He told me he had seen the names of the 10 men they'll kill first when they take over. He said the two preachers on that list, one is Dr. Jack Van Impey and one is Dr. Jack Hyle. Al Janney said that. They hate us while we entertain them. They hate us while we detente them. They hate us while we wine and dine them. They hate us while we toast them. Now you say, preacher, what's the answer? Is the answer, Mr. Ford? No, sir. Is the answer, Mr. Carter? I'm sorry, but no, sir. I'm not much impressed with talking about being born again between cocktails. No, that's not the answer. What's the answer? The answer is a generation of people like you and me who give everything to Jesus Christ. Our boys and girls are facing, listen, our boys and girls are facing a world of slavery, our churches closed, our schools destroyed, unless you and I mean business for God. The answer is right in these pews tonight. And it well could be, that this week could mean the difference. I've told this story and many of you have heard it. I promised I'd tell it across America. And I'll tell it again tonight. I was in Portland, Oregon, preaching several years ago. I got burdened for the city of Portland. I have a little prayer place in my office. It's a map of America. I pull down that map and pray for America, many of the big cities in America, every day. I was in Portland, Oregon. I was told at that time the largest church in Portland that believed the Bible was running about 300 in Sunday school. I went up on top of the Sheraton Hotel in Portland, Oregon, and I looked out over the city and saw those lights. And I began to pray and cry and cry and pray. From 10 to 12 that night, I wept over Portland. I said, oh, God, as I used to do for Atlanta, oh, God, send somebody to Portland. Oh, my God, these thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. Oh, God, send somebody to Portland. I prayed for a couple of hours. Got off my knees, went back down to my room. When I got to my room, turned the television on, listened to midnight news. And the newscaster said President Nixon was going to Red China. And that President Nixon had come out in favor of admitting Red China in the United Nations. I just soon see John Dillinger in the Ministerial Association. When I heard that, I began to weep. My boy David was playing his last basketball game in high school. He'd started 64 games as starting guard, and I had not been there for one single game. And I love sports. And I was thinking about my boy. I would love to have his dad watch him play one game. And how night after night I'd been preaching around the country somewhere, wishing I was watching my boy play basketball. And he was playing his last game that night. And I began to weep. And I said, America's going to the devil. There's no hope for her. Mr. Nixon's going to sell her out to the Red Chinese and Russians. And it seemed like they punked and whining and dining the Chinese and the United Nations acceptance and all the rest of it. America's gone anyhow. I'm not going to spend my life traveling up and down this country anymore. I went over and opened my briefcase. Got out my schedule. Took my pen, began to scratch off dates. I scratched off 2/3 of my dates. And I said, I'm going to be home, son. I've got 3 daughters and a son. Hardly know what it is to have a dad. And I'm going to stay home. And I'm going to be sort of a normal fella. One of my ladies last week said, Dr. Howell, Pastor said, do you get discouraged like people do? And I said, I'm going to be a normal preacher. I'm going home. I'm going to write letters to all these places that I've scratched off of my calendar. And I'm going to spend some time at home with my family and get to know my children before they grow up. I caught the plane, flew back to Chicago. Next Monday, I left to go to Los Angeles, California. I sat down. Dictaphone machine and a briefcase to dictate some letters to cancel out those engagements. The empty seat beside me was the front seat in the tourist section. I was sitting next to the aisle, empty seat. The lady about 22 years of age sitting over next to the window. I spoke to her, being from Texas. I was born and reared in the Holy Land near Dallas and Fort Worth. And I spoke to her, and she spoke to me. I noticed she was a little dark, like maybe a Latin, had a little accent. I said, that's a mighty pretty baby you've got. How old's your baby? She said, 4 months old. I said, I got a grandbaby 4 months old. Just happened to have 45 pictures here. Be glad to show them to you. She said, you mean you're old enough to be a grandfather? And I said, we're going to get along real fine. We chatted a while. She said, mister, could you let me out, please? I'd like to go warm some food, Gerber's or Heinz, one, for my baby. And I said, let me do it for you. She said, no, you'd get your dark blue suit dirty. She said, let me buy and I'll warm it. I said, no, let me do it. I'd like to do it for you. She said, okay, but you're going to get dirty. I said, all right, but I'll do it. I took the Gerber's food, went down the aisle way to where the stewardess was. I said, could you warm this food for me? She said, is it for your grandbaby? I said, just warm the food and shut up. That's all you have to do. She warmed the food. I took it back. The lady said, thank you, sir. I never told her who I was. I took the baby and held it in my arm here. And I felt a little head is bobbling, you know, from side to side. And I aimed as best I could and hit the mouth every once in a while. And I'd put it in, and out it'd come, and I'd scrape it, out it'd come, and about a tithe would stay in each time. For a while, I fed David. And then for a while, I fed Becky. And for a while, I fed Cindy. And for a while, I fed Linda. When the food was gone, she said, now could you let me out, please? I want to go warm the bottle. I said, let me warm the bottle. She said, mister, you're taking your luck too far. Let me warm the bottle. You're going to get dirty. You got a dark blue suit on. And I said, please, let me warm the bottle. I'm having the time of my life. She said, all right, but you'll be sorry. And I was sorry. I took the bottle and walked back down the aisle, holding the bottle. I said to the stewardess, I said, would you warm this bottle? She said, is it for? I said, just warm the bottle. She warmed it. I took it back. And then
She said, I'll feed the baby. I said, no, let me feed the baby. She said, mister, you're going to get filthy. I said, let me feed the baby. I cradled the baby here. And out with the bottle. And sweet memories flooded my soul. When I finished, she said, now, let me have the baby and I'll burp the baby. And I said, no, let me burp the baby. She said, miss, you're going to get filthy. I said, let me burp the baby. Okay. I put the baby over my shoulder. I patted it until... and more than wind came out. Clabber, yogurt, buttermilk, I'm not sure what it was, all over the back of my navy blue suit. Oh, she said, mister, that's awful. I said, yes, ma'am, I know. The stewardess came, and she washed my coat for me. And the lady said, now, I must rock the baby to sleep. And I said, let me rock the baby to sleep. She said, mister, haven't you learned your lesson? I said, no, ma'am, let me finish my job. I don't like to start a job and not finish it. Okay. I put the baby on my shoulder and patted its little, it patted him. And here. I said, here, maybe you better take this baby. I decided it wasn't so important to finish the job as I thought it was. And so I gave her the baby. She changed the diaper. I began to read a Sports Illustrated magazine. She said, are you a sports enthusiast? I said, I'm a sports nut. Read the sport page every day. I can see two doodlebugs running a race, and I'll stop and pull for one of them. She said, my husband's a touring professional golfer. Your husband on the golfing tour. That's right. I said, I belong to Arnie's Army myself. She said, I like Arnold Palmer too. We chatted a while. The baby went off to sleep. I said, little lady, could I ask you a question, please? Where are you from? Your accent betrays the fact that you're not a Native American. In broken English, she said, I'm from Cuba. Cuba! How long have you been in America? She said, 11 years. Were you there when Castro took over? Yes, I was. Did you ever see Castro? Yes, she said, Castro has been in my home. He's eaten at our table. He's rocked me on his knee. He's played ball in our yard. My dad, she said, is on his cabinet. Then she told me a sad story. How that her father had gone to Russia for 6 weeks and taken a school and been taught to go back and murder his own wife because she was not a communist. She said, my mother smuggled me and my sister, 2 years younger, to Miami. Then mother slipped off and escaped and came to Miami. The First Methodist Church in Riverside, California, adopted us, got my mother a job. We went to California. And she said, that's how I came to America. I said, could you tell me, please, what Cuba was like before the revolution? Tears began to stream down her cheeks. She said, mister, don't ask me that. Don't ask me that. And I said, look, I'm a public speaker. I speak in colleges and other places across the country. I believe I could help if you tell me. I promise I'll use it for good. She said, mister, when the communists took over in Cuba, they killed or imprisoned every Bible-believing preacher in our country. She said, one day, I was a little girl, 9 years old. I heard the marching of an army outside the house. I heard somebody say, kill him, kill him, kill him! I looked up and said, mommy, whom are they killing today? And my mother said, they're killing our preacher today. She said, mister, I heard them. I heard them kill my preacher. She said, how would you feel if they killed your preacher? I said, pretty bad. Pretty bad. She said, I heard them shout, kill him, kill him, kill him. I heard them say, ready, aim, fire. I heard the crackling of the bullet, the gun. I heard the thud of my pastor's body and the groan of his voice on the concrete as he died. She told me so many things about Cuba. Her eyes filled with tears. She squeezed that little baby to her breast. I said, tell me something. Compare Cuba then with America now. She said, don't ask me that. Don't ask me that. Don't ask me that. I said, please, I won't ask you any other question. Never told her who I was. Never told her my name. Never told her my profession. Never told her who I was. I said, please tell me. That's all I'll ask you. She said, don't ask me that. Don't ask me. And I said, please, I'll not bother you anymore if you will. She squeezed that baby to her breast, looked up at me with tears streaming off her cheeks down to the baby's clothing, and she said, mister, she said, America tonight is just like Cuba was then. I don't care for myself. I'm not thinking about myself. I'd rather see my baby die right now than go through what I went through with. If we don't mean business for God, your kids are going to go through with it. I said, thank you for helping me. And I told her the wonderful story of Christ. 30,000 feet in the air, she was sweetly saved. Never told her who it was, but she was sweetly saved. Finally, the stewardess came on and said, ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to the Ontario Airport in Los Angeles, California. Please put out your cigarettes. Dr. Rice put his cigarette out, I remember. She said, fasten your safety belt. Be sure that your seats are in upright position, and all carry-on luggage is stowed safely beneath the seat in front of you. So we came in for a landing. We started to get off the airplane. I said, could I carry something for you? She had a baby, a suitcase, and diaper bag. Red, yellow, and pink diaper bag. Guess what she gave me? You guessed it. I got the diaper bag. There I was, briefcase in one hand, dark blue suit on, clapper shoulder. Smelled awful. I got off the plane, a yellow and pink and blue flowery diaper bag. The pastors who met me had come all the way to the gate, not in where they normally meet me. And three of them looked up with me and said, oh, Dr. Hiles, we didn't know. I said, just shut up and take me to my room. We walked inside the terminal. I guess 1,000 folks were there. Never told her who I was. Never told her what I do. She thanked me. I walked away. She turned, walked about 100 feet away, I guess, across the terminal. And over 1,000 people, I'm sure, were there. I heard her voice say, hey, Reverend! Hey, Reverend! Reverend! Hey, Reverend! I didn't tell her I was a preacher. I never had mentioned I was a preacher. She came running back. She put her suitcase, diaper bag down. She came running over to me and she said, Reverend, I know who you are. I read about you in Newsweek magazine. You pastor a big church up near Chicago and you preach to preachers all across the country. She said, Reverend, you do have a chance to help. She looked at her baby and she said, Reverend, I'm not asking for myself. I'm asking for my baby. She said, Reverend, Reverend, whatever you do, don't give up on America. Oh, my. Oh, my. My mind wandered back to Portland, Oregon, on the 10th floor, the Sheraton Inn, when I'd scratched off some dates off the calendar, and I said, America's going to hell. I stood there beside her. She squeezed her baby in. She said, for my baby's sake. A crowd gathered around. I was weeping unashamedly. She was standing weeping beside me, and three preachers standing there weeping also. She turned to walk away. Every eye in the terminal almost was on her. She walked about 100 feet away, and she turned, and across the crowd, she screamed again, "Reverend! Hey, Reverend! Tell all the other reverends not to give up either!" Folks, I ask God every day to give us 10 more years. Every day. I sort of believe in 10 years more we can do it. I sort of believe if preachers like you and churches like you and Christians like us can say, "All to Jesus I surrender, all to Him I freely give," I believe somehow in 10 years we can spend this old time. We may be able to elect Lee Robertson president in 10 years. You stop and think, Dr. Hudson. You stop and think, compare 15 years ago to today in America. I get on my face every day and say, "Oh my God, let me live 10 more years. Just give me 10 more. And let America be free 10 more years." We have 4 children. Becky is a pastor's wife in Saginaw, Michigan. She has 2 little girls. I want them to have a chance. I don't want to see the dirty communists come and destroy our homes. Take our children. I want my daughter to be able to be the kind of pastor's wife that many of you have been able to be and live in a free country. And she'll not do it unless you and I mean business for our God and get off our blessed assurance and do something for God. Oh, you long-haired freaks. Oh, you mini-skirted little Jezebels. Oh, you Playboy magazine crowd. Oh, you Edge of Night and doctors and nurses and all in the family watcher. Oh, you folks that never win a soul. Never darken the door of church on Wednesday night. Rise up, oh people of God. We're in the battle of our lives. I have a son. He's 22. He's on my staff. I love him. One of these days, this old foggy voice is going to preach his last sermon. And I'm going to hand him a book. I don't want a sword piercing his breast. I don't want him taken away to some prison to rot and take his own urine and own dung for communion. I don't want that. You sit at home and do nothing for God if you want to. You go ahead. But don't you kiss your kids goodnight tonight and tell them you love them unless you're doing something to save this country. Unless you've got a bus route or a Sunday school class or going soul winning or building a great work for God or doing something for God. We have far too many half in, half out, half on, half off, half hot, half cold Christians who just don't do one solitary thing for Jesus Christ. We're the trouble in this nation. America's going to hell because of that kind of Christianity. I dare you tonight. I dare you. Let God change your life, Missy. I dare you to say, "By the grace of God, I'm going to give everything I have to my Lord for the salvation of my country, for the future of my children." Our middle daughter, Linda, will be 19 in 2 weeks. One of the sweetest persons I've ever known. I've never seen her mad in all the 19 years. So often, we'll sit at the table at night, late at night. They always wait. I'll be home tonight at 1 o'clock, and they'll be up waiting for me. They'll crawl out of bed and come down. Dad will teach them a few things about life before we go to bed tonight at 1 o'clock in the morning. They'll be up. They'll come down. And Linda, so often, she's at the dad. "Do you think we'll have a chance? How does it look?" I get in on Wednesday night, Wednesday afternoon. I'm preaching every Monday and Tuesday. I go straight to the church, conduct the services, take my suitcase and my study. After the service on Wednesday night, I take my suitcase and go to the car. Doesn't matter how late it is. It's midnight. Cindy, our 16-year-old daughter, almost 17, is sitting by herself in the waiting room waiting for her dad. We walk down the hall. She's not a hugger, she's a snuggler. I have a standing rule in my church that I'll kiss any female under 6 or over 60. But I kiss my own in time I want to. So I'll kiss her. By the way, I've raised that to 70 recently. Because I'll be 50 next month. And these 60-year-old gals looking mighty good to me these days. She'll sort of snuggle up to me. And more often than not, she'll say something like this. Daddy, did you get any preachers on fire on this trip? I spoke at the Southwide Baptist Fellowship a year ago. Our college choir went and sang on Monday night. They went on the bus. Linda is in the choir. Was. I stayed to speak on Tuesday, and Linda asked me if she could stay with me and be with me on Tuesday and fly back with me. And I said, of course, sweetheart. The next day, I preached that morning, and after that, I took her out to eat lunch. Put her over to a place and bought her a dress. Went down and got us an orange, Julius, started to say Romeo. Orange Julius. We drank it together and talked in the afternoon. Caught a Delta Airlines plane, flew back to Chicago, had dinner there at the beautiful Chicago restaurant. Finished dinner, walked to the car to drive home. They got a few feet from the car and I saw a tear trickling down Linda's face. I said, what's wrong, sweetheart? We've had a good day today. She said, Dad, I don't mean to cry. I just hate to see it end. I knew what she meant. She meant probably that would happen again. I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know what you're going to do. But I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to give my life to try to save this old ship from sinking. I don't know what you're going to do. Maybe you're going to sit home and watch television all Wednesday night. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. You're a Sunday school teacher. We're not going to save this nation that a generation of Sunday school teachers get as excited about their classes as the communist professors do about their classes. What are you doing? God could reach out this week and grab this many people and shake you good and hard and say, for the grace of God, I'm ashamed of myself. My country is going to hell. I don't know about you, but I still love this old country. Still makes me mad, and these idiots burn the flag. I want to see blood. You say, you must hate. Yeah, I do. You say, that's not right. Nobody's perfect. I love the national anthem. I love America. I love capitalism. I love the kind of nation we've had for these years. Hey, what are you doing to say that? You Sunday school teachers have 101 fever, so you can't come teach Sunday school. All fooey. I was up in Canada the other night preaching with Dr. Oswald Smith, Paul Smith at People's Church in Toronto. And I said, you Canadians say, we feel it, but we don't show it. We just do not express it. I said, the only one thing I have to say about that, I don't know how to spell it, but I do know how to pronounce it. It's pronounced... If the quarterback, Terry Bradshaw of the Pittsburgh Steelers, can crawl out of the hospital with 103 fever and pneumonia and play in the Super Bowl, you can crawl out of bed and teach your class with 101 fever. I say to my staff, don't you call in sick, you crawl in sick. Oh, you say, how cruel. Yes, I'm cruel enough to believe we can save this old nation if we'll mean business about it. Some of you deacons, you think you're God's gift to Wall Street. All you do is try to run the church and run the preacher. I was up in... Somebody said, "Preacher, it's 9:15. When are you going to quit?" "I don't know when I'm going to quit. If I see the end approaching, I'll announce it." I preached in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Big old pot-bellied deacon walked up to me and said, "Oh, my soul." He said, "I dead sure wouldn't be a deacon in your church." I said, "Boy, you just don't know how true that statement really is." God give us some deacons who are soul-winning deacons. God give us some teachers who will say, "I'll succeed." I'm so tired of mediocrity and failure, I don't know what to do. What are you doing for God? What are you doing to save your nation? There are hundreds of people in this room tonight who need an old-fashioned trip to an old-fashioned mourner's bench. Clean out your refrigerator. Clean out your bookshelf. Clean out your magazine rack. Clean out your dirty rock music out of your record player. You say, "Man, I'm not going to come back Friday night when you preach. That's why I'm plucking your tail feathers tonight." God bless old Oliver Green. He's in heaven now. He's the noisiest guy up there, I'll bind you. He's got a radio broadcast all over the celestial world. I heard him one night preaching. He put his leg way up here, had a pulpit, put his leg on his tent, way up on a pulpit like that. He said, "I don't know what you're doing. You criticize me because I got my leg on a pulpit." He said, "Brother, this is my pulpit. These are my britches. And if I want to split my britches on my pulpit, that's my business. If I want to split my britches about my crowd Friday night, that's my business." What are you going to do? Huh? What are you going to do? What are you going to do to save America? What are you going to do with your Sunday school class? How about your life? How about your influence? In God's name, this week we ought to have a complete rejuvenation of our churches in this area, of our lives to God. Every person in this room ought to say, "I'll give my best to Jesus Christ. I'm not going to hold back a thing. I'm not going to let by idly and stand by and see my country perish. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to give all I have to Jesus Christ." I'm going to close now. By the way, don't get your hopes up. I close 7 or 8 times a sermon. I just close and close and close and close and close and close. I just love to close so much sometimes I start off by closing. Now for my first closing. In our church, we have a little lady. Came by my study one day, not particularly pretty, but a lovely Christian lady. A little short gal, has freckles and red hair. She came by and she said, "Pastor, would you pray for my husband and me? We want to have a baby." I took a little oil, if I remember correctly. Put it on her head and prayed for God to open her womb and make alive the seed of her husband. She came back in a few weeks and she said, "Pastor, guess who's pregnant?" Seven months passed. Never saw a happier couple about expecting a baby. 7 months passed. She came by the office one day and she had trembling hands and she said, "Pastor, I don't feel any movement. I'm afraid the baby, is something wrong with the baby." She went to the doctor. The doctor examined her and told her the baby was dead. Picked up the telephone to call St. Margaret's Hospital. Said, "I want to reserve a room, please, for a little baby, for a little lady to have a stillborn baby." The lady said, "Hold it, doctor. Hold it, doctor. Hold it. I can't go to the hospital today." Doctor said, "What do you mean?" She said, "This is Thursday. I'm a bus captain at First Baptist Church. I spend 8 hours every Saturday out knocking on doors trying to tell little boys and girls about Jesus." He said, "Why, you're a fool. You may be dead this Saturday. She said, "Doctor, that isn't all. I teach a Sunday school class of little girls at First Baptist Church." She said, "I've got to teach that class Sunday morning." Now, she said, "After my pastor finishes preaching Sunday morning, I'll report to the hospital to have the surgery." The doctor said, "You're a fool. You may not live till Sunday." She said, "Yes, I will. But if I don't live, I'm going to visit my bus route and teach my class." That next Saturday, it was sleeting, freezing rain in the Chicago area. That little lady, bless God, she got up. By 9 o'clock in the morning, she was out knocking on doors. For 8 long hours, icicles on her face, tears streaming down her cheeks, a dead baby in her body, and a broken heart in her breast. She walked up and down Chicago streets and ghettos, telling boys and girls the wonderful story that Jesus loves them. Next morning, she got up bright and early before daybreak and was out gathering up those little boys and girls on her bus. She stood before that class the next day, on Sunday morning, with her heart broken and a dead baby she had wanted so much in her body, and tears streaming down her cheeks, teaching this blessed book to little boys and little girls. She came to church and wept through a sermon, then went to the hospital and gave birth to the dead baby. That's what it's going to take, folks. That's the way the communists live. And whoever wants it the most is going to get it. I think there's hope. I do. That's one reason why I go around America shaking pulpits and beating old pulpits and stomping and hollering, screaming and bellowing, saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, we can, we can, we can, we can, we can, if we will, we can save this whole nation." But it's going to take thousands of people just like you and me to give all we have to Jesus Christ. I'm going to close again. 10 years ago, next month, I got on my knees in my basement, and God took this heart inside and broke it for my nation. I went upstairs and woke my boy David up. He'd been my buddy and still is. How close we'd been. I called him downstairs and told him about my burden for America. I showed him invitations, that high that I had to preach. And I said, "Son, what can I do?" And we knelt and prayed, and I gave my heart to go over and all the time. Haven't had a vacation since that night. Or a day off. I've cried. And I begged God, and I pleaded. I don't know what you're going to do, but sometime this week, I'm going to get in my prayer closet and give God all of it. I'm no Falwell, and I know it. I'm no Rice, and I know it. I'm no Lee Robertson, and I know it, and I wonder sometimes why the hellfire and damnation hollering, screaming, bellowing, coughing, frogging preacher gets up in crowds like this. But bless God, I'm no John Rice, but I can give as much of Jack Hiles as John Rice can give of John Rice. And I can give as much of Jack Hiles as Lee Robertson can give of Lee Robertson. And I can give as much of Jack Hiles as Bob Jones can give of Bob Jones. And I don't know what you're going to do, but I'm going to say, all to Jesus, all to Jesus. All to Jesus I surrender. All to Him I freely give. I will ever love and trust Him in His presence day to live. All of it. Will a real America please stand up? Would you bow your heads, please? Every eye is closed. Every head is bowed. Dear Jesus, You know where I want to be tonight. I want to be home. You know where I want to be. I want to be behind my pulpit in my church with my people. God bless them right now. Tell them I love them. But oh my God, our nation's perishing. Their sinister forces were giving their all to destroy what our founding fathers had built. Oh God, tonight, sometime during this week, maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I don't know when, but sometime this week, oh my God, may the flood tides fall on this place. Bless the Sunday school teachers here tonight. Bless the deacons tonight. Bless those teenagers whose lives are not counting for God. Bless those men, great big old men, that never have won a soul, stripped away from soul winning, not doing anything for God. Oh, Spirit of God, brood over this place this week and especially in this moment. Our heads are bowed.